This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
They need help in the trenches, and I think Sean McDermott wants that, Brandon Bean wants that, whether it's defensive tackle or defensive end, and it is a very good class at both of those positions. It's not just Abdul Carter. It's not just Mason Graham inside from Michigan, and even if teams need those premium positions, there are enough that feel like they are going to be first-round caliber, and it's a really good edge rusher and interior defensive line class. So it will come down to the grades. It'll come down to, of course, what the Bills prioritize and, of course, what they do in free agency, filling some of those defensive needs in the trenches.
Chris Trapasso of CBS Sports. Very good stuff from Chris. Check it out. A lot of good draft stuff coming in the next couple of months from him as well. 803-0550 is the phone number. It's Jeremy and Joe. Talk to Paul Hamilton coming up at 8:30. Talk some hockey, the Four Nations tournament. Try not to rant too much about Dahlin not playing in overtime last night, but I just feel like that Sweden coach doesn't know what he's doing or doesn't know how good Dahlin really is if he's benching him end of the third and into overtime. We're talking James Cook, though. And he is, you know, being a little aggressive, I think, about going after what he wants contract-wise, just more so than you normally see from a Bill. And I'm not against it at all. You know, like, I don't think it's a problem. I'm not even sure the Bills hate it. I don't know if they care. They are very much an organization that lets you be you. You know, everyone says it. The way that all the media guys know it, the players talk like that. Dawkins said it at the Super Bowl. Like, they let you be you here. And if being you is being loud about how good you are or whatever, like McDermott, especially, his end-of-season press conference, we can play it back, too, at some point. The James Cook comment from McDermott about how their backfield kind of operates and how competitive it is with each other and how Cook will even, like, yell at him on the sidelines, but, like, in a, like, get me on the field type of way. Like, McDermott loves it. And I think a lot of that is where Cook has come from. Cook is still, I'm sure, this a little bit, but he was very quiet, didn't say anything at the start of his Bills career to now. Again, I'm not saying he's like the most boisterous guy in the locker room, but if he's willing to like be yelling on the sidelines, you saw how fired up he was after scoring that touchdown in the AFC Championship. And I think McDermott even said that Cook is now like in their leadership group. Like he's somebody that when their leadership group talks to coaches or whatever, like he's a part of that group. So there's that. There's how much he's improved as a player. The one area I don't really feel like he's improved that much is pass protection. You know, like, he came into the league with that being a glaring hole and something he needed to get better at if he was ever going to be a regular passing down back, but he grew in all the other ways. His vision as a runner, first and second down guy, he got more physical. He got faster. The numbers bear that out, by the way. Like, I'm not sure what he did workout-wise last offseason to get faster, but there's player tracking with miles per hour now, and the 20-plus or the 15-plus mile-per-hour bursts that you see are far greater than they were in previous years for James Cook. So he's been a very impressive player. I'm kind of caught in the middle because I think I still want to err on the side of caution and not generally wanting to pay a running back a second contract. If there ever was a time to do it, maybe this is a player that you should be okay with it. Because he's not, unless he's going to stay really strong on the $15 million number, you know, if you can get him around 10, then that's a modest running back contract. For the cap going up, it's about the same as James Conner and Chuba Hubbard. Like, we're talking about the secondary backs of the league, if you can get him at that number. And one thing that I always like to look at for running backs, and when it's predictable that they're going to have their drop-off, is looking at their total touches. Look at the mileage on their bodies, because they take a beating. And it's a position where if you lose a step, that's it for you. Typically, that is it for you. You've got to be so good at other things to make up for that. So oftentimes, it's not perfect. Of course, some guys go over it, some guys go under it. But around 2,000 career touches, college plus pro, is a pretty good benchmark. It's a pretty good number to watch for. Guys, once they start to get to 2,000 and above that, that's usually about it. It's usually about it for them. Again, there are anomalies. There are examples of Derrick Henry, for instance. Derrick Henry is blown by 2,000 career touches and looks like he's the same dude. He's a specimen. Adrian Peterson blew by 2,000 career touches and was still a dominant player for a few years after that and then lasted in the league till he was like 36. But a lot of other guys, Le'Veon Bell, Ezekiel Elliott, Todd Gurley, Dalvin Cook, that was about the number. It was about, yeah, right around 2,000. That was it. That is, it's like a, you know, not to compare them to cars, but when a car reaches 100,000 miles, you know, you start to think, all right, maybe time for a new one. And the positive about James Cook, that I don't know how often this would be viewed as a positive. It usually would be more viewed as a risk or a negative for a player. But for me, I even remember saying this when they drafted him. One thing that I liked about selecting James Cook in the second round when they did, not only they traded down twice but before they picked him, it was, oh, well, this dude's got no mileage on the tires. He just wasn't a huge part of the Georgia offense when he was in college. So between not being a feature back in college and not being used a whole hell of a lot in his first year with the Bills, you now look at, look, compare him to his brother. Total touches before your second contract. Where is James Cook right now stand compared to his brother? James Cook is at 927 career touches, college plus pro. Dalvin Cook, at this same time in his career, which is when he got paid, he was at 1,327. 400 more touches, and that was with a season completely lost to a torn ACL. That matters too. Dalvin Cook had 400 more touches and a torn ACL in his history when the Vikings signed him. Cook does not have the same mileage, and he does not have the same major injury history. Not to say Dalvin had a bunch of them, but James Cook's got nothing major injury-wise. And sure, that can happen to anybody, right? Which is why That's the push and pull for me right now. Like, the pull is, you know, he doesn't really have a lot of tread on the tires. He just came off a year where he was faster than ever, more dynamic than ever. Like, he's become more of a professional than maybe he was at the beginning of his career, if that's a fair, you know, thing to say about him. Like, okay, don't mind it. The counter to that for me always, though, with running backs, and this is not a James Cook point, this is just a running back's point, is they're always, at this age especially, 26, 27 years old, James Cook going into his age 26-year-old season. At this point, they're a major injury away for that being it. That's it. Almost never does a running back at this spot in their career sustain a major injury and really come back from it in any sort of productive way. And that's not true of other positions. Like, it's not true of quarterback. It's not even as true of wide receiver. Like, there are a bunch of receivers who have picked up injuries around this age and have gone on to still have great careers after the fact. You know, tight ends, running backs, it's because of the short lifespan of the running back position. And it's because of that, you know, you lose one step and there's a guy waiting behind you who is a fifth-round pick who's twice as fast as you are now, and it's all about hitting those holes as quickly as possible. Like, that's where I still lean towards, I just don't think I'd want to do it at any cost. Almost any cost, I'm not sure I'd want to do it. I'd be worried. I'd be worried about that guy's an injury away from me being locked into 2-3 more years of a back that I'm no longer expecting anything from. And when you sign a Shakir or a Benford or a Rousseau, any of these other guys, if the same thing were to happen to them, I would think, okay, that stinks. Long road ahead of recovery, but I'm hopeful and optimistic that on the other end of that, they're going to come out nearly as good of a player. We just kind of saw from Matt Milano, didn't we? Like, he wasn't perfect when he came back, but he picked up two major injuries in a two-year span at 29 years old, and within a couple of games, like, oh, that looked like Matt Milano. Remember we played the Jets in week 17? He's like, that looked like Matt Milano. That looked like a great linebacker. And it's just more rare for that with running back. It's not impossible. It does happen. Peterson did it. You know, others have done it. But it's just, it's a lot harder, I think, for that position. And that would scare me off of any running back for a second contract. Let's go to the phones and go to Anthony in Buffalo. What's up, Anthony?
Hey, good morning, Joe. You know, two things here. Number one, with James Cook, you know, is the franchise tag an option for him to get his $15 million for a one-year deal? And then the second point I wanted to make up was, you know, with this upcoming draft and the defensive ends, the defensive tackles that are, you know, supposed to be very deep, do we, you know, in the past, obviously we haven't really been hitting on those players. You know, do we really kind of trust that they're going to grade these players properly and, you know, find a stud out of this, this new crop of players coming into the league this year? So that was really what I wanted to say. Have a good day, and
yeah.
Go Bills.
Thanks, all Anthony. Right. Their draft process, I don't know they always do this, but my biggest critique of them over the years has been more, how many times you draft a player where there just doesn't really feel like there's a ceiling? You know? You're drafting a guy that you're pretty sure is going to be productive for you and is going to be someone that's trustworthy and you feel really solid about being an NFL caliber player. AJ Epenesa comes to mind for me on this. Boogie Basham, although I guess Basham didn't turn out to this, but I remember thinking about him when they drafted him. There have been others. Maybe even Coleman to a lesser extent. Guys that you feel like they're going to be NFL pros, but you're not going for the elite athletic traits that you can morph into a star player. And I'm not saying they've never done that. They have, and it's actually blown up in their face. Like, I think Kyer Elam was a little bit of that. Kyer Elam was a player that did not fit their style of defense at all. But he was big for the position. He was long for the position. He was fast. I think Elam ran a sub 4.440. Yeah, 4.39. Speed, size, and length. And they said, we know he played a defense in college completely different than we did here. We do here. But look at all these traits. We could turn that into something. And they didn't. And again, I'm not saying they've never done it either and it's worked. Spencer Brown, I think, was this. Spencer Brown came from a small school, had not played football that long. Remember, he was playing 7-on-7 football only a couple of years before he got drafted. He was a third-round pick, but why'd they draft him? Because he had like the best athletic profile in the draft. It was, okay, didn't play at a high level, but, and Allen is this too a little bit, we can take those athletic traits and morph that into a star player, and that has worked. I mean, Spencer Brown, I think, is one of the top 10 right tackles right now in the league. At least the former lineman that like to study this stuff, you know, kind of imply that. So again, I'm not saying they never do it. I think I just like them to do it a little more often. So that's my only critique. It's not even a major one. And then on Cook being franchise tag, my only worry there would be how upset are you making the player? Do you feel like that's a good environment? Do you feel like that's going to get, you know, that's a solution? I don't know. The way Cook's already talking and the way running back is, the way his brother has already been through this and is a voice for him and his agent too, but his brother I think is a big influence probably on this given that he's already gone through it. Like, I know what I would tell him. If I were James Cook's agent, I know what I would tell him. You don't play another snap until you're getting paid. You know? You don't play another snap until you get paid. Because of what we just talked about. You are a significant knee injury away from never getting your payday. Never. In a running back's lifespan, unless, again, you're an all-time great like a Derrick Henry, you got one big payday. That's usually it. And if I'm James Cook, if I'm someone that's close to James Cook, I think the advice I'd want to give him is, every snap you take from here on out, you are risking losing your one big payday. Because if he got a significant injury this year, I don't think he'd get it. I don't think he'd ever find his way to the big contract. You know, the big by his standards, big by running back standards. 4 years, $42 million. You know, instead of that, you get a big injury, you might be looking at like a 1 year, $5 million deal. Like, there's a lot of money you could lose on the table if you're a running back versus, you know, Chris Godwin's a free agent this year at wide receiver off a major injury. I still expect him to get a big payday. Maybe the term isn't there as much for him, but he's going to make money. Mike in Pennsylvania is next. What's up, Mike?
Hey, if I'm the Bills, here's two things. I think James Cook is worried about getting paid, and I think the Bills have the leverage in this situation on not to pay him just because they have a capable back backing him up. I do deserve he, you know, should get some, you know, maybe an extension, but not to the tune of $15 million. I would be shocked if he's still a Buffalo Bill after draft day. I just feel like when you go public like that and you're trying to, you know, create leverage, and really all you're doing is creating tension between the organization and you. But I think there's serious doubts on if the Buffalo Bills are going to pay a running back $15 million a year. Listen, Cook is good, but he's not one of the top, in my opinion, he's not one of the top five backs, and he's asking to get paid like that. There's a lot of stuff that I think James Cook doesn't do well, but I do think there's a lot of stuff that he does well. If I'm the Bills, I'm really looking to part ways with him, move off of him, and then just elevate Ray Davis up. I think they're in a great position to do so because of the depth, and there's a lot of the fans out there, I'm one of them, that wanted to see more of Ray Davis. To me, I feel like he can do pretty much most of what James Cook could do in the receiving and running. So I feel like the Bills are in a great spot. And if I'm them, I'm allocating that money, that $15 million that you're trying to get, James Cook's trying to get, and I'm allocating that to a receiver, Myles Garrett, whoever, wherever, but not running back.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike. All reasonable. All reasonable. I think Cook is a better player than Ray Davis, but I do think Davis is better at certain things. I would actually trust Davis more as a pass catching back right now because he's a better blocker, and I think he probably actually has better hands. I think Cook's a better runner, though. And the numbers bear that out. Like, the rushing yards over expected, like, Cook is significantly better than Davis. The vision, the burst. I like Davis, though. If you told me Davis had to be their lead back for half a season, like, I feel like they'd do completely fine. I don't think they'd miss a beat, even if the player isn't, you know, as good. But I mostly agree. I don't think $15 million is the number anyway. It's the number he's putting out there, but if the Bills want to do 8 and he wants to do 15, like, the numbers they're talking about are somewhere in between that. Really, I think the real debate is about, do you want to pay him 10, 11, 12? Like, that to me is the range that's more likely. Maybe I'm wrong, though. Maybe he will hold really, really strong on that. One more quick call, and then we'll hit a break. Rick in Hamburg. What's up, Rick?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Morning.
I just don't think paying a running back that kind of money is worth it. I would like the other caller said, but actually, I would invest it in the interior defensive linemen.
Yeah.
I know you go back, but I'm just reminded of guys drafted in the third round and beyond. Terrell Davis, all these other running backs that turned out to be really good, solid running backs, and you didn't have to pay them. And Saquon Barkley was invisible in the Super Bowl game. Invisible.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks. Thanks.
I would rather, besides, if you look at the Bills' offensive line, I mean, pretty much any halfway decent running back can run behind that line.
Well, that's where, yeah, thanks, Rick, for the call. The line point, there are almost two layers to it. I think what Barkley kind of showed this year is there are only certain situations where a running back is really that valuable to you. It's if you have a good offensive line or even a great offensive line in front of them. Because that's a good point. If you plug in any average back on this Bills line, you're probably getting pretty good results. At least pretty good. It would be hard to mess it up. But then you have to evaluate, okay, who's the best now at getting away once they're in the open field? My line has done a job. My scheme has done a job to get these running backs to the second and third level. And now I have to decide, how badly do I want somebody that can create more yardage and more big explosive plays once they get to those linebackers and safeties? Because that's what happened in Philadelphia. Last year, they had the same amazing offensive line. And guys like Kenneth Gainwell and, you know, Boston Scott, these no-name average backs, would go in there and they get you 3-4 yards a carry because there were holes. But then when it was time to get into the open field and make guys miss to make a 5-yard run, a 25-yard run, they didn't possess that capability. And that's where you got to almost decide, how valuable is James Cook compared to the average back? The average back is going to run through those holes that Connor McGovern and Deion Dawkins and Spencer Brown are creating for them. Now, who's the guy I want to beat the linebackers and beat the safeties? And James Cook just had a phenomenal year doing that. And I think Ray Davis could give you some good results there too. Maybe not as good, though. And I would agree with most of our callers here that, sure, I think Cook's better for this offense, better in those spots, better at creating the explosive plays, but I'm not ready to give $12 to $15 million to get that. Time out here. We'll get back to some hockey. The Four Nations Tournament. I think Dahlin should have played more last night. Ask Paul what he thinks about that. Sweden and Canada got things rolling. Team USA, there's a lot of hockey to get to. Coming back here on WGR.
It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, was the bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
All right, let's talk some hockey, some international hockey. It's Jeremy and Joe. Paul Hamilton joining us now on the Wester Hotline. Good morning, Paul. I hope you haven't had to go outside yet because it's very gross out.
I have not gone outside yet.
No. Good for you. It's gross.
I did not realize it was gross.
You're either stepping on ice or your foot is going through the ice and then your foot is submerged by a puddle that's underneath everything right now. So it's pretty tough.
Yeah, no thank you.
So last night's game, Paul, and the Four Nations tournament, excited to talk about it with you. I mean, I thought the hockey was good. Like, I don't know how much of a question you would have had of how good the quality of the game would have been, but I don't know, like the hitting was there, they didn't call a lot of penalties, I guess, but the speed and the hitting, like it's just you can't even compare it to what it's replacing in like all-star games in recent years.
The start of it was absolutely insane. I mean, the first goal that was scored 56 seconds into the game, when you have McDavid and Crosby and MacKinnon on the ice together, and McDavid gets the puck, gets it to Crosby, who's headed towards the net. He does a little pirouette, sends a perfect pass to Nate MacKinnon, who's staring at an empty net, and it was just, a gorgeous goal. Great skill. And Canada just kept going from there in the first period, at least. And, McDavid was putting on an absolute clinic out there. Mm-hmm. And then they scored another.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing.
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-based insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Gorgeous goal, but a little bit later, Point leads a 2-on-1 and gets Marchand for a layup, and now it's 2-0. And I think Sweden they didn't have a shot for a lot of the period, and they think they went into the locker room and said, we got to slow this down, because if we don't, we're going to get blown right out of the back of this building. And, you know, then they did slow it down somewhat and were able to get themselves back into the hockey game. I mean, you know, Canada, you know, they only had seven shots in the second period, six shots in the third period, and then they put the pedal to the metal in overtime again and had eight shots in overtime and had an exciting overtime. But it was, then we got to see a good comeback by Sweden, who was able to get back in the hockey game and tie the hockey game. So then Sweden's goaltender stood on his head. Gustafsson had, great saves after great saves. And, you know, finally, Canada was able to get the overtime victory.
Yeah, and Canada gave you the one thing you might have hoped they would if you're playing them, which is the goaltending isn't maybe what, you know, you would expect from a Team Canada. And you needed the one soft goal, right? Like, Kempe coming down the middle is a great shooter, but puck's kind of in the middle of the net. Is it almost amazing, Paul, that, you know, we haven't had these conversations in forever. I mean, it's the first international best-on-best tournament in 9 years. So this doesn't come up often, but is it almost weird that Canada's got superstars at every position, but they don't in net, I guess, right now? Like, there's no top goalie in the world. They have starters, but no guy that's like a Vezina caliber guy.
Yeah, they got a couple that won the Stanley Cup, but yeah,
that's true.
You're absolutely right that they've always had like top notch. You know, Patrick Waugh, you know, or Luongo,
yep,
or
Carey Price,
Brodeur.
Yep.
You know, they've always had a guy like that. And they just didn't. Actually, the goal you brought up, I thought the same thing till I saw the replay. Kempe actually used Doughty as a screen.
Oh, okay.
Because he actually, I think he shot right through his legs.
Okay.
And they're teammates with the Los Angeles Kings.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of set Doughty up, and Doughty, you know, screened his goaltender for him. So, but I thought the same thing you did when I first saw it. And then when I saw the replay, I actually saw what Kempe did.
Paul Hamilton with us yesterday. The Four Nations face-off gets rolling. Canada over Sweden in overtime. Paul, how did you think that Dahlin played?
I thought for the first half of the game, he might have been Sweden's best player. You know, I thought, he was skating pretty well. I thought he was getting up into the play. He had that really good play. And right before it, he really defended MacKinnon well. MacKinnon came down with speed, and Dahlin, I thought, defended him, did a really nice job defending him. And then next thing you know, the puck's behind Gustafsson, and there's Dahlin to sweep it out. He was in the crease. I don't know if it would have made it all the way to the goal line, but there's no sense finding out. And he was back there and swept the puck out, so I thought he did a nice job there. As the game went on, I don't think he was quite as noticeable, but he also doesn't have a key role on that team. He is their number six defenseman right now. He doesn't play on either special teams.
Mm-hmm.
Now, interestingly enough, on the second last shift, started about a minute and a half left in the game in regulation, they put him out there with one of the best defensemen in the National Hockey League, Hedman.
Yeah.
You know, he was paired with Hedman, and then he didn't play in overtime. Didn't play at all.
That was mind-boggling to me a little, Paul. Like, even the role that you just kind of described, like, he played the fewest shifts of any of their defensemen last night. Like, it was pretty balanced. Like, Hedman played the most. They started playing Carlson a little bit more, but actually, what it ended up with? It ended up Hedman and Forsling really playing the most by a lot, and everyone else was pretty close. But like, a lot of Sabre fans were complaining about this last night. Like, I was too. Am I wrong for thinking that, you know, because we're close to the sun here. Like, we watch him every game and every shift. So I watch Jonas Brodin and Gustav Forsling, but clearly not to the same degree. Am I wrong for being confused that they don't see Dahlin as, like, a defenseman that's a tier above other good defensemen, but Brodin, Ekholm, Forsling, like Carlson at this point. I don't know. Am I wrong for thinking Dahlin is a better option than all of those guys?
It just goes to show you what Sweden thinks of him, that they just don't feel he is blossomed into the defenseman that everybody thought he was going to be when he was drafted in 2018 as the number one overall pick. Sweden shows you right there what they feel about him. And the one thing that puzzled me about overtime isn't – I don't think he's leaps and bounds. I mean, Forsling really, I mean, was great in the playoffs last year and really opened my eyes to the type of defenseman he is and how good he can be. But, I mean – I think Darlene could tie his hands behind his back and be a better defenseman than Erik Karlsson. Erik Karlsson cost him the game. I mean, Erik Karlsson played twice in overtime. He played 12 seconds and 10 seconds in two shifts, and he cost him the game in those 22 seconds. All he did is back into his goaltender. I mean, he was so scared of the speed that Marner was coming at him with, and he knows he can't defend. And he knows he's awful at defending, and he basically backed into his goaltender because he didn't step up and make a play. Dowling is a much better defenseman than Karlsson is, much better. But Karlsson has this offensive reputation, whether he's playing for Sweden or whether he's playing for the Pittsburgh Penguins or no matter who he's playing with. And even the offense isn't really there anymore. I mean, it used to be. I mean, he used to be the best offensive defenseman you could have. He's never been a good defensive defenseman, and he's just gotten worse. So I don't know why, if you are going to not go with two of the guys in overtime, but you are going to spot somebody, I don't know why it would be Karlsson, unless you're thinking, well, we have to get some offense out here. We have to score here in overtime because he's going to kill you defensively, and he certainly did.
Right, and you would think Darlene could give you at least both on both ends.
Absolutely could. Yeah, I mean, at this point in Karlsson's career, Darlene is so much better than Karlsson, and I think even at Karlsson's best, he still was so bad defensively that I'd much rather have Darlene out in that situation.
Well, because what Darlene might do there, I mean, he was throwing his body around last night. Like, what he might do is step up on Marner and, like, I'm not sure he's going to throw a Stevens open ice hit, but he might have tried to step up and made some contact, which...
It's exactly what he did to MacKinnon on that play out. He stepped up on him and you know, defended very well, I thought, on that MacKinnon play right before he had swept that puck out of the net. Exactly what you're talking about is that's what he did. And I just that's what I didn't get. If you're going to put Karlsson on the ice for only 22 seconds, why weren't those 22 seconds Darlene's?
So tonight, 8 o'clock is USA and Finland, Paul, and then Saturday will be USA and Canada. For your thoughts on Team USA's roster and how it's kind of come together here. They lose Quinn Hughes. They didn't bring Tage Thompson or Cole Caulfield. I know those were a little debatable. But how do you feel like they stack up for the whole tournament now? Do you think they're on Canada's level or close to it compared to maybe, you know, international tournaments of the past?
Well, as far as the whole roster, no. And I think they have a very good roster. Don't get me wrong. But I think Canada has a better roster, but you mentioned the goaltending.
Goaltending, yeah.
And Hellebuck is, many people feel, is the best goaltender in the National Hockey League. The only thing about Hellebuck is he's never really had a good playoff.
He was really bad last playoff, right against, was it Colorado in the first round?
Yeah, but there's a big but to that. A lot of people theorize one of the reasons he has bad playoffs is he's out of gas because he plays so much.
Right, okay.
And if that's the case, he should be pretty good in this tournament because you're right in the middle of the season.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't be, quote, out of gas yet if that indeed is the reason why. So you might expect him to be better in what you would see in a competition like this, a playoff or an international competition like this, just because the time of the year it's being played in. But certainly on paper, Team USA has a much better, you know, situation and goal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like they have bad forwards. I mean, you're coming at your top two centers are Matthews and Eichel.
Mm-hmm.
You got the Tkachuk brothers. You got Hughes. I mean,
yep.
Connor doesn't get the respect I think he should. I mean, he's got 30 goals already. I think people always overlook him, but, you know, in the lines that you saw in practice, he's going to play with Eichel and Tkachuk, Matthew Tkachuk. So, you know, there's some pretty capable guys, you know, in their lineup, but I just don't think it's as good as Canada's.
Yeah, Connor has scored 30 goals every year of his career since 2017, except the COVID-shortened year, where he got 26. So
yeah,
that's
but, and he's only 28 years old, and but, you know, people just I just don't think he gets the respect he should as that type of a goal scorer. Maybe it's because he plays in Winnipeg, and maybe people don't see him as much, whatever it is, but he just doesn't. And even on defense, you know, I think, you know, Canada got a big loss, and Theodore's out for the tournament now.
Mm-hmm.
I understand what Drew Doughty used to be, and through one game, I think it was an absolutely huge mistake.
Mm-hmm.
He only had played six games this year.
Yeah.
And he was responsible basically for two of the goals against.
Yeah, it looked like it. It looked like he had only played six games.
He got totally outfoxed by Raymond, who just, you know, won the battle. And on the first goal, and Raymond came out with the puck and worked it around, and that wound up in the net. And Doughty wound up just running around. He just was not good at all. But I don't blame him. I mean, you know how they call, you know, get into game shape?
Mm-hmm.
He can't be in game shape yet. He's only played six games. And you put him in this kind of competition right off the bat, I don't think it's fair to him, to be quite honest with you, at age 35, because he was, you know, he's not as good as he used to be anyway. So I think Canada made a huge error there, and now he's going to have to, you know, take on a bigger role now that, you know, they've lost a defenseman for the tournament.
Paul Hamilton with us on the Four Nations tonight, USA and Finland at 8. Thanks, Paul.
Take care.
Paul Hamilton on the Western Hotline. Quick timeout here. When we come back, got another good question on James Cook that I think is going to be added to the whole picture here. We're going to be evaluating it, I think, him for a lot of this offseason. 803-0550 is the phone number. It's Jeremy and Joe. This is WGR. Jeremy and Joe, we've got the Four Nations tonight, 8 o'clock U.S. and Finland. It is warming up a little bit this afternoon, so maybe that, you know, walking around on ice and then you step through it to the puddle, maybe that's gone away a little bit. Just more rain. Really gross out, though. Weather's been terrible. When we come back, James Cook. What do we do with this? He's unfollowing the Bills now on Instagram. Like, this is, again, like, how much do we want to take social media stuff to heart? And I don't think you should completely ignore it. But you get this a lot. Dak Prescott did it with the Cowboys, so. What do you think? $15 million, $10 million, no extension at all? Should they pay him at all? Let us know what you think. It's Jeremy Joe, 803-0550 is the phone number. This is WGR.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over, and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.